Each week, The New Yorker's cartoon editor, Robert Mankoff, judges his fellow cartoonists from on high. He's in a, maybe he sits on a comically exaggerated high horse. It's hard to say. But no man so carefully treads the line between the witty, the pretty witty, the not unwitty, an obscure reference to Conway Twitty. For every dog on the psychiatrist's couch that makes the cut, there's a piece of talking broccoli Rob left on the cutting room floor. Enter Matthew Diffie, himself an accomplished cartoonist. Right now, he's furiously sketching away. I think he liked my idea about talking broccoli Rob. Wait, is the guy's name Rob? How does the reader know he's not an asparagus? How are you, Matthew?
I'm doing very well.
Matthew Diffie is out with his second collection of something called the Rejection Collection. Well, I don't even know if I could say the subtitle, but these are all the cartoons, or the best of the cartoons, that were rejected by The New Yorker.
Yeah.
Oh, so take me through the process. Let's say I'm a young cartoonist. It's always been my dream to be rejected by The New Yorker. Yeah. What are the steps
I take? That's easily done. It depends where you live. If you live in New York, apparently you're free and able to come into The New Yorker offices on Tuesday and pitch your ideas of the week to Bob in person, and by Thursday, you'll be rejected.
Do you pitch them as concepts, or do you draw them out and show them?
Yeah, you draw them up like in what we call a rough, which is just a sketch form, just enough to get the idea across.
And if you live elsewhere, do you fax them in?
Yeah, you can fax in or send in the old-fashioned way.
So what kind of, for a cartoonist who gets in a lot, what's a good ratio of accept to reject?
Yeah, we all do 10 ideas a week. That's kind of the recommended amount. And on a really, really good week, when you're really, really funny, you'll sell one. So 90% of your work gets rejected when you're at the top of your field.
How many weeks go by where you don't get one in?
Often, yeah. Weeks, too many to count sometimes. I guess I've gone like 13 weeks without selling.
Oh, man. And
that's now that I'm sort of a little more established. The first year, I only sold 4, so.
And also, they know that since you have the outlet to put it in the book, the Rejection Collection, how does that change Matt Mankoff's judgment? Does he say, oh, he's gonna let this one out there anyway and embarrass me for
passing
on it?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, he knows. He can see it coming, I think, now. But I think the difference for the cartoonist is some of these ideas that we would think of and say there's no way.
Yeah.
And before, we may have drawn them just to make Bob laugh, off record. But now we'll go ahead and do them and spend some time drawing them properly.
Oh, that's good. It must help the creativity then. If you know that there's an outlet, maybe some of the ones that you say, oh, he'll definitely reject it just because this book exists.
Yeah.
You draw it and he says yes. Does that happen?
I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. You'd have to ask Bob that. I sometimes see racier, rowdier cartoons in there lately, and I'm like, I secretly, you know,
I wondered
think
about
maybe.
That. Are there guidelines they kind of give you about what's acceptable, what's not, you know, stay away from this? Or is that just sort of like urban legend that goes through all the cartoonists?
I've never been sat down. I've never gotten a memo, but I think we all are pretty clear on what is inappropriate for The New Yorker. Anything that's politically incorrect or, you know, bestiality jokes don't go over well at The New Yorker.
You know, it's funny that you
really
say that because I went through the Rejection Collection. Yeah, I went through the Rejection Collection and I did an index in a way. And there are 6 bestiality jokes. It's, other than tush jokes, it is the number one category of rejected cartoons.
Interesting.
But you cartoonists still go for the bestiality joke, huh?
Yeah, there's nothing funnier, is there? No.
And then there were 2 dogs on a date in one of the cartoons.
Yeah.
And there was a debate in the office. Well, if it's 2 dogs talking about having sex with each other, is that bestiality?
Hmm. I would say no.
Okay, you're the cartoonist.
That's perfectly appropriate.
That's just beast.
But the question
beast
is, should they be wearing human clothing?
Or smoking cigarettes in bed next to a woman, like this one chicken who the caption says, "That's it, mister, you just lost your free range status."
The chicken has slept with the farmer's wife. Those are both by Harry Bliss, who's just a really crude, fantastic cartoonist.
The two go together. You know, sometimes it's hard to describe a cartoon, but we tried. Yeah. We had the Bryant Park Players give voice to a couple of the cartoons in the collection. Let's hear one of my favorites.
A family of 8 is sitting on a couch. The father is reading from a book that says O'Farrell Family Album. The father says, "So, kids, you should be thankful we don't live during a potato famine, especially you, Jimmy." As we scan the faces of the children, we notice that Jimmy's eyes are wide and his mouth is frowning. He also has the body of a giant potato.
Very nicely done. That's why.
Was that anti-Irish or anti-potato?
I think just stupid. That's by Paul Noth, who is
if you reject for stupid, I don't want to know you.
Yeah, well, Paul Noth, incidentally, is also the creator of an animated sort of sensation called Pale Force with Jim Gaffigan.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
So he's
well, that if you get rejected from the New Yorker, I know there used to be more magazines that carried cartoons. Maybe I got even a misremembering it, but it seemed to me that, you know, I know Playboy did cartoons, and some of them, it seems, used to be better or funny, or maybe every once in a while a cartoon that would appear there could appear in the New Yorker. But do you have any other outlets for your rejected cartoons?
Yeah, there's very few now. There's a few sort of specific, like there's Harvard Business Review who does cartoons, but I think they're a quarterly, if I'm not mistaken.
And they're a laugh riot. And if New Yorker's conservative, think about the Harvard Business Review.
Right, yeah. There used to be 20 magazines.
If you get the Sarbanes-Oxley reference wrong, you're axed.
But there's not that many places anymore. Playboy is the next biggest place. And, you know, they have certainly opened the doors to a lot of more racier cartoons, I would think.
Including the 8 different tush-related cartoons in the rejection collection.
Not to mention the toilet humor, literally.
Yeah,
toilet cracking jokes at one point.
The toilet cracking jokes saying, I think this is just going to be a better day today.
Yeah, yeah. Like, today is going to be different. I can feel it. It's the optimistic potty.
Let's hear another one from the Bryant Park's players, giving voice, breathing life into these cartoons.
A man is taking a drink next to a water cooler in hell. A demon prods the man with a pitchfork and says, "Hey, get away from the urinal." As there is no urinal in the scene, we are left to assume that the water cooler is indeed filled with urine. The man's surprised expression seems to confirm this theory.
I love that, the post-cartoon explanation.
Well, on the New Yorker website, you could, you know, that you could order cartoons on a shirt or a mug, and the ones that don't have captions, there actually are these explanations. And man, do those, I don't know who they hire to do it, but I don't know if they outsource it to Bangalore, but they certainly kill the jokes.
Yeah, I thought that as well. But I guess you got to explain it to some folks.
Let's hear one more, and then I want to ask you about what I think. Well, why was that one rejected? Just potty humor, I guess?
Yeah.
Scatology?
Yeah, I mean, it's disgusting.
Enough. You're the expert.
That's by Pat Burns, too, we should mention.
All right, now let's hear the third one that we have on tape.
A tiger is perched atop the carcass of a freshly killed zebra. Blood drips from his fangs as he remarks to a smaller tiger cub, presumably his son, quote, "Sure, it was a sweet gig, but I'm a carnivore for Pete's sake." The loquacious predator in question looks remarkably like beloved Frosted Flakes pitchman, Tony the Tiger.
Was that a copyright issue? You can't tweet Frosted Flakes?
Yeah, I don't know. We didn't even... I'm sure somebody looked at that at the book publisher, but I didn't deal with it.
Don't mess with icons. There's one about the 7 dwarfs. There were 8, and the last one was Malignancy.
Instead
of Dopey. Like, don't mess with certain not childlike icons.
There are 2 Snow White jokes in the collection I found. This is what I think is the most brilliant thing. This is, it's called The Prophet Muhammad, and it says DIY blasphemy, and I'll describe it. It's a picture of what looks like the chest and torso of Muhammad, but it's a connect the dots picture. So, and if you do connect the dots, I presume you have just drawn the Prophet Muhammad, which is blasphemy.
Yes.
Was this the sort of thing that Mankoff said, this is brilliant, but you know why we can't run it? We'll get in too much trouble. We will be offended. We'll be doing exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they thought about that for half a second and
really
thought
and then better. And then they backed off.
Yeah.
Well, this rejection collection, which you, Matthew Diffie, have put together, is a fantastic book. I'm not bragging when I say it's in many ways these things are a lot funnier than the ones in New Yorker because they're a lot more daring. And thank you very much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Heritage turkeys. Remember it for next year.
Yeah. Could be funny.
Heritage turkeys.
Also, it's floating bladders. There's lots of humor there.
We've given you a plethora of ideas. Tegan and Sarah coming up on the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.